Can you whistle that yet? You know that theme, Dreams of Children, by Shadowfax. I've asked many times, you know, if anybody who's got wants to do a variation of that on any other instrument, including voice, I would like to hear it. You know, you play tenor sax, that's good. Play some other instrument, you want to do a variation of the theme, I would like to hear it. But it's an important thing because it signals that you're back on with us on WBAI on a Wednesday, which we haven't been here for a while of Wednesdays, to be able to talk to you and take your calls. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. You know, when I hear something familiar, it's really nice because it makes me feel safe. There are so many things in life that I embrace. And I realize part of the reason I embrace them is because they give me a certain sense of wholeness. Now, the rest of the time, I'm looking around and I'm trying to figure out what I got to do, who I've got to do it to, who's going to do it to me, when it's going to happen, where it is there a problem, is there not a problem, do I have to fix it, don't I have to fix it, how do we pay the bills, all of those curious little things that each one of us have to go through to so that we could finally close our eyes and relax and go to sleep at night and feel safe. Safety, such a big deal. Such a big deal. Think about the human animal. I mean, the human could never survive if he didn't have other humans, if it were like in the primitive form. I mean, maybe Tarzan could have survived by himself, you know, but he had a chimp. But most of us, and we are designed to be part of a group, because the human species survives as a group. Safety in numbers. That's the expression. Now, this is not what the program is about today. Because, I mean, what is safety? Safety is kind of a relative thing. I mean, if you're in Haiti, when do you feel safe? You know, let's sit around. Oh, no, here comes another. Here comes a disease. Here comes an avalanche. Here comes a storm. Here comes a guy robbing my money. Here comes Papa Doc. So safety is like, but yet I know quite a few Haitian people who, when they're sitting on the floor having dinner with their family or sitting at a table having dinner with their family, there's a certain sense of safety. Family helps you feel safety. Connected to family helps you feel safe. A lot of the people in agrarian societies, out in the farms and so on and so forth, they feel safer than the ones who are in these urban environments. You know, you're in New York. You know, who are you going to have? You're going to have the some guy running around grabbing your parts, right? You're going to have somebody who's going to try to take your stuff. You have to lock your doors, protect yourself. That's what people do. That's why people have doormen. Try to put it's a hired daddy. You see, daddy get in the way between the outside and me. And locks and elevators and all that stuff is to try to make you feel safer. But what's it about? What's it about? Why are we trying to get this way? Because there's some part of the human body that in order for us to survive, we have to recreate ourselves. In other words, we put out a lot of energy and we are using our energy all the time. And then we have to recreate that energy. And the only way you can recreate that energy is by usage of the other part of the nervous system that helps you regenerate tissue. So safety is about regeneration of energy. If you never felt safe, how could you? I just finished a book about a man who spent 47 days at sea. It's called The Unbroken. Unbroken. 47 days at sea with sharks swimming around. And reminds me of a joke. Oh, it's time for a joke, don't you think? Hasn't been a joke in a long time. There's a story about a man who is born, and he's born on this planet, and he always has a rough time. From the day he is born, the very hospital that he's in, gets hit by an avalanche, right? And he's separated from his parents, and they can't locate him to his parents, so he's brought up as a foundling, you know, and they put him away in some kind of a place with other children who have no parents. And he's there, and he's working in this place, and suddenly a flood comes, and it wipes away the home that he's in. So he kind of takes off on his own, and he picks up, and he's a young boy all through his life. And then suddenly he finally eventually winds up in a home because it gets struck by lightning, and the home kind of goes away, and he just doesn't know what to do. So he kind of takes off on his own. He's traveling around, and an earthquake comes and gets him, and more things happen to him all the time. So he decides he's not safe on land, and what he decides to do, he decides to go to sea. So he goes to sea, and he's at sea, and he's floating around in a tramp steamer, you know, and suddenly his tramp steamer in the middle of the Pacific gets hit by an iceberg, as only he would do, and the ship, everybody saved except him, and he's floating there in the sea, holding on to a piece of timber which is being eaten by termites. And off in the distance he sees sharks coming right at him. And he says, oh, no, this is it. I can't. A whirlpool is kind of sucking him down under the water, and the timber's getting smaller and smaller, and the sharks are coming in from a distance. And so he looks up to the heavens, and he says, why? Why me? Why all these things happening to me, God? Why me? And he gets pulled down for the second time, and the sharks are getting closer, and the termites are eating away at his timber. And he says, I don't care. I'm willing to go. Just tell me, why me? And the timber's getting smaller, and he gets pulled down for the third time, and then the clouds part, and a little basket comes out of the sky with a little ribbon in it, and the ribbon says, because something about you just bothers me. You see, we feel that way sometimes. You know, but it's an interesting reference to God, because people feel that religion protects them. So this becomes the question. The question is about protection. Protection. What's all this protection about? I heard a story the other day about a young woman who was like 12 years old, and she goes into a store to buy something, and the man, who was kind of a slobbering guy, grabs her and kisses her right on the mouth. And she runs outside and tells her mother. She says, Mommy, Mommy, this man, look what he did. And the mother says to her, don't tell your father. And she says, why not? She says, good, so your father will kill him. And she says, but I want to tell Daddy. No, Daddy will kill him. So in order to protect Daddy from killing somebody, she had to be quiet. And do you know that woman grew up with a prejudice against the race of the person because she wasn't allowed to express what she feels because she was being protected by her family? Protection. Protection's such a funny thing. The person who protects others, sometimes you protect people against life difficulties. Like, you know, you could be somebody who's kind of taking care of your children, and you protect your children against ever getting hurt. That's something that happens frequently. You don't want it. That's your job. Don't let them get hurt. But, you know, there's something wrong with having rubberized monkey bars. You know, monkey bars are those things that we have in the park. Well, when I was a kid, we would climb on the monkey bars, and you'd fall down, and you'd hurt your knee, you'd hurt your elbow, you know, crack your head on a pipe, but nothing really horrible happened. But they didn't settle for that, so they put rubber underneath the monkey bar. So now when you climb a monkey bar, if you fall on rubber. Okay, and therefore nobody really gets hurt. Is that a good idea? Well, then the child doesn't learn that there's danger if they fall out of a monkey bar as much as they would learn if there was a cement on the bottom of the monkey bar. And was anybody getting killed from the monkey bars? If they were, they would have taken down the monkey bars. But when you climb on a tree, there's no rubber underneath the tree to protect you. But sometimes protecting people physically does them harm because it gives them an illusion. In fact, protecting people always gives them an illusion. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Your need to protect and the illusion that you perpetuate by doing that. So protecting somebody physically, that's a nice thing, right? It makes you feel powerful. It makes you feel strong. I'm there for you. Look, nobody will get in your way. Nobody will mess you up. I'm your strong, big protector. Then there's the other thing that people do, and this is the most common, protecting people from feeling things. Like a woman came to me the other day, and she's been trying to accept her role that she was given as the head of an organization, she said. But, you know, she's never been the head of an organization before of any significance. And she says, you know what the people are saying to me? They're looking at me as if I want them all to feel safe. So I don't want to tell them. I don't want them to feel bad. So she's got to protect everybody against their feelings. If you ask her about it, she tells you she protects everyone. She protects her mother from what her mother really feels. She doesn't want people to feel bad. Do you ever feel that way, that you feel responsible for people's feelings? Do you ever get that? And then you want to make sure they don't feel bad? So if you have something to say to somebody that may be honest, but it may hurt them, you want to protect their feelings. So if somebody's wearing something that looks terrible on them, or half their body is hanging out of it, and you think that it really is in poor taste, and everybody laughs at this person when they walk down the street, but you don't want them to feel bad, so you let the world laugh at them and ridicule them, but you want to protect them. Is that protection? What is that? And this is what I want to hear from you about today. Protecting someone. So we protect each other so much. I like being nice. I think that's a nice thing. But please don't protect me too much from who I am or what you feel, because I would much rather have your honest response to me and deal with it than to have you protecting me from your observations or what you feel towards me by not telling me the truth. So do we protect someone's, there was a phrase, protecting someone's ego, whatever that means. And ego very often means their sense of self. In fact, it means their false sense of self. You have somebody who has a lot of pride. You go over to them and you say, I'm going to protect your ego. I'm going to protect your pride. I want you to feel proud of yourself. I'm not so sure. I don't know what that does for somebody, because very often you're protecting something that's a false self. So if somebody comes up to you and says, don't I look beautiful? And they don't look beautiful, what do you say? You could say, oh, you know, I really love you a lot, and I really think you look beautiful in just about anything, but that may not be your very best choice. That's one way of saying it. Or you say, oh, yeah, you look beautiful. People protect each other's sexuality, too. You know, this is a big deal. A big deal is couples kind of make a deal. I promise to make you feel like a woman if you make me feel like a man, or if it's two men, it's two men, or if it's two women, it's two women. But I promise that you will to protect your sexuality by giving you a feeling that you're very potent and very wonderful and very sexual and terrific. So you lie. So you make believe. So you have fake orgasms. That's kind of nice in a way, but on the other hand, there is a silent you that's always at work saying, I wish this would get over quickly. You can protect your property, too. You know, there are people who are hired to protect. So insurance agents, right? What's their job? Protect your property. Protect your health. Maintenance people. You hire a maintenance person, they're there to protect your property. Security, you could hire security people, and you could hire people who are people who save your retirement money, and bankers and your accountants, they protect you in a way. So there's a whole protective world out there of professionals. I mean, there's the police and the firemen, and it's all about who is the protector. Well, do people really protect each other? Think about it. I know a lot of people who are dedicated to protecting causes. They protect the wildlife, they protect the forests, they protect children, they protect... It's a funny thing about it, because if I ask them up close, what is it about it that you're protecting? Almost invariably, everybody talks about their own innocence. Now, innocence is another interesting concept, because if you feel like something is innocent, like a bird, a dog, a tree, or children, you want to protect it. But the need to protect someone's innocence usually has a direct correlation to the loss of yours. So protectors of the innocence have usually lost their innocence, and they're trying to get it back, and they try to get it by protecting the other innocence. So all these cause people, a lot of people who are very involved in causes, which I'm glad there are, because we need them in the world, but many, it's not about the thing they're protecting themselves. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I want to talk to you about your protecting. Do you do it? We're going to be asking for your phone calls about 212-209-2900 a little later, but you can get ready. Our motive to protect is very worthy of question. I mean, I'm not so sure why I want to protect you. I'm not so sure. You know, sometimes protection is infantilizing. You protect someone and you don't let them learn how to do things. Sometimes it's disempowering. You kind of take the wind out of their sails by showing them how wrong they are and how well you could do it instead. And there's sometimes it's just the very thing that you're doing is toxic to a person, makes them become more dependent on you, makes them become sicker, sets up a thing where they say to you, I'm going to let you be my protector. There's almost nothing I could think of that's prettier than watching two people in their 80s or 70s crossing a street holding arms, and their eyes are darting out as if they're protecting each other along the way. It's a pretty thing to see. It's really nice to see. They're saying one of us feel a little too vulnerable to go out there on our own, but together, the two of us, we could keep an eye out for each other. Nice thing. Nice thing, couples who think that they can keep an eye out for each other. Nice thing to have a family who keeps an eye out for you. But sometimes they say there's a thing called overprotective. Overprotective. If you've got a son who's at home and he's 26 years old, I promise you, you're overprotective. Right? That guy's not getting out of the house and getting his own place and doing his own thing. There's a problem. Because it's going to be very hard for him to ever, ever leave your bosom. Usually the son happens to be with a single mother, you know, as opposed to with a family, because most fathers want to kick their sons out and say, get out of here so I can have some fun. Go have your own fun. But they don't do it. So sometimes... And sometimes you protect people to protect yourself. I know parents, especially image-driven parents, who want their children, they protect their children from being ridiculed, but they do it by having the children dress a certain way, talk a certain way, act a certain way. And what you're really doing is protecting yourself from being ridiculed. You're protecting yourself from being criticized. You get a call from the school, and the school says to you, your child did a bad thing, and you feel humiliated. You feel their report card is a reflection on you. I've seen people beat children because of a low report card. But why are they doing that? Why are you beating your child who's got a report card that says that they're failing their grades? It's really saying this kid is missing something. What you need to be doing at this point is loving this child. No, that child is a bad kid because they got a low report card, so we'll beat them up. Fear of looking bad, fear of reprisals, fear of being criticized as a parent. By my protecting you, in a way, I can also protect myself. Another motivation for protecting is I may not protect myself. I may be pretty risky. in the way I live. Like, I may live wild and I may drive a fast car, but when you're in my car, I want to protect you from getting scared, so I'll slow down. So very often, people attach themselves to people they protect so that they can actually start taking some cautious way of protecting themselves. Isn't that strange? Isn't that unusual? Like, I know a lot of people who have had trouble with alcohol and drugs. They get in a relationship and they wind up protecting their partners. And by doing so, they start reducing their alcoholism and their drug addiction. Or the usage, their excesses. I know a man who's got a relationship with somebody. There were two that I knew of. One was somebody who had migraines. And he would want to protect her from these migraines all the way. And so he'd run around to all the doctors. They'd get all the medications. They'd get everything else. And finally, they went somewhere to a specialist who said, "You must stop all that you're doing and accept this migraine as part of your life and not medicate it and not to." And well, believe it or not, it cured the migraines. Stopping the pressure to get rid of it was, I wouldn't say cure, 95% cure. They still come back, but you don't deal with them the way you used to. I know another man who's got a mate. And she's manic depressive. And she falls into a depressive swing, a terrible depressive swing. She gets so upset. And so he tries to protect her from falling into that depression. And when she falls into it, he says, "I can't go to work. I have to stay home because she's so, so upset." I spoke to this man the other day and I said to him, "Well, why don't you just let her be upset? Let her go there. Maybe she'll find something in the bottom if you're not bailing her out." He kind of doesn't think of it that way. He thinks he's the only salvation. He's the only solution. And in a way, he is. In a way, it's very risky to let somebody be on their own. But sometimes you just have to step back. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We've been talking about protecting people. We've been talking about this illusion that there's that some good comes of it if you work at it. Have you ever done it? You know, there's people who are natural born protectors. These are the people who feel like they're real leaders, and what they do is they have this this feeling that they have to protect everybody. They have to protect no matter what. They just must. And that's part of the heritage. Now, there's a very interesting thing in the Enneagram called the instincts. There are three instincts. Oh, by the way, in the studio with me, Linda Vanilla. The instincts are really interesting, aren't they, Linda?
Yes, they are. Yes, they are very, very interesting when we're talking about safety. And we have the self-preservation, we have the social, and we have the sexual.
She's talking about three.
The three variants of instinct.
So in other words, if there's an instinct, everybody is in one of these three instincts: the self-preservation instinct, the social instinct, and the sexual instinct. And here's how they're defined. Which is the so imagine a three-legged stool, and on this three-legged stool you have one of these three is shorter than the other two, which means that it's going to lean in that direction because we all have all three. We all have self-preservation. We all have social and we all have sexual. So let's talk about the three. What is the self-preservation?
The self-preservation, Armand, preoccupies with becoming and getting the safety and preserving it. That's basically the self-preservation instinct.
You're going to be safe no matter what. This is the kind of person who carries food with them, you know, in case they need it. They carry a bottle of water everywhere they go. This is a self-pres. Self-pres is always taking care of themselves. Me first, I got to make sure I'm okay. Because the world is a dangerous place. Okay, that's a self-pres. What's a social like?
The social instinct is to feel safe with others. So there's a need, there's a drive that I have to be safe, not only for myself, but I have to feel safe when I'm with others around me.
The social instinct, as I see it, is I only feel safe if I am part of a crowd, if I am part of a group. I have to be, the social instinct is I must be acceptable to everybody. And those are usually the very nice, the very sweet people who everybody likes, and they usually have very little in achievement because they're always afraid that they're going to displease people. So their achievement is always limited, their money is always limited, but they are liked. The nicest person. A whole bunch of people show up at their grave. You know, when the time comes, they have biggest, most, everybody loved them. Everybody loved them, right? And those are social types. And then there's the sexual type, what they call the sexual type, which really is not about sex.
No, Armand, it's not about sex, but it's about connection. It's about the need and the search for a connection with others around you. So that it goes beyond that feeling safe with others, but now I'm out there to connect. And in that connection, feel safety.
So I don't feel safe the normal way. I'm like, I've got to find my charge. I got to find a way to feel good. And the way I feel good is by getting connected to somebody else, not being part of the group, which is what the social does. The sexual variant or the relationship variant that we're talking about looks and is on the hunt all the time to have some kind of a decent connection with other people. And a decent connection meaning usually intense, usually a relationship of some kind. So there's everybody has these three things. You're all self-preservationists, you're all social, and you're all sexual. But if you were to look, which one of those three is more like you? Are you more social? Are you more self-preservation? Or are you more connecting relationship sexual type? So if you pick one, you're going to find that one of those is the most like you, and one of the other two is your weak area. Like, for example, let's say you're a social type, and then you find that you're also good in relationship, but you're going to be terrible at taking care of yourself, see? Or if you're somebody who's a self-preservationist, you may also be very much good in a relationship, but you're going to be socially connected to nobody. I mean, people will barely know who you are. So of the three types, usually one type is most like you, and one type is your problem area in life. Now, how does this relate to protection? Because all three parts, all three variants are in our attempt to feel safe in the world. And how do you feel safe? Do you feel safe by taking care of people? Do you feel safe by taking care of yourself? So finally, before we take your calls on protection, there's always self-protection. How far can you go with self-protection? There are some people who protect themselves so much that they're paranoid. You know, they just don't care about anybody else. It's I gotta be safe. I gotta close the door. Phobic people are always trying to find a way to be safe. You know, the worst is when you feel this terror and dread all the time. So the show is about protection, and we want to hear about you as a protector and your need to protect. And did you ever question your need to protect? Did you ever have doubts about it? We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll play you a little very interesting music, and then we're going to take your calls at 212-209-2900. We'll be right back.
You can join us.
Hoppa! Hoppa!
Hey!
Hey, a little gypsy music. You know, if you're ever curious about the music that we play, if you go to the website, thepositivemind.com, wherever we list the archives of our program, which we keep up there for centuries, you could find the music that we used on the program. That's a little gypsy music from you by Isabazada. But, you know, if you want to look for it, if you love it, you can always find it. In fact, somebody should put together a CD of all the music that I've played over the years. Wouldn't that be a terrific thing? Just one CD of every piece that we've done in the middle. What a thing that would be. So we're talking about protecting, and we're talking about these people who are perennial protectors. Some of us are always protectors. You know, one of the things about protecting, and we're taking your calls at 212-209-2900, because if you're a protector who's always protecting, you lost sight of the fundamental principle. Everyone begins as an innocent and without guilt. And everyone can sense truth and come to perceive the world as hard and unjust, where the powerful take advantage of others. As a result, you learn to assure protection and to gain respect by becoming strong and powerful and by hiding your vulnerability. And that's the primary thing that protectors do. They hide their vulnerability not only from the other person, but from themselves. How are you going to be king if you have nobody to be king of? Right? I remember that was an Alice Cramden story that she did. You know, he said, I'm the king. And she said, and he said, and you're nothing. And she said, that makes you the king of nothing. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
All right, man. Hey, so is Armand, is he up for a conversation, or?
Here you are. This is Armand right now.
Hey, Armand, how you doing, man?
Good.
Hey, this is Tommy from out in Seattle, man. I love you.
Hey, Tom, thanks for calling.
All right, man. Hey, I just wanted to, you know, one thing I found that in protecting and being a caretaker, I just got out of an 8-year relationship, and just happened, actually. And the whole time it was protecting, taking care of, the whole, and ultimately I just lost myself. I didn't even know who I was, you know, so I just became this person that was always doing. And next thing you know, I couldn't even recognize myself anymore. So.
Yeah, it gets interesting. But now tell me the good news about this. What's the good thing about doing for somebody? What's the great thing about it? I mean, isn't there a wonderful feeling? I imagine it must be a wonderful feeling to make somebody so happy. Like, I know people who have sex, and the only thing they like about sex is they want to have the other person must have an orgasm. There are men who believe that the women have to be able to have an orgasm, and that women
right.
believe the man has to have an orgasm, and they don't care about their own pleasure. All they care about is the other person's pleasure, and they feel the height of pleasure when the other person reaches their height of pleasure, and they don't care about themselves at all, which is okay. I'm not saying,
right.
I'm not judging that. So there's extraordinary feeling of power when you could.
Yeah, I mean, because I could identify that, because within my relationship, I had, it was like, my partner had an orgasm first for me, and I would make sure that she would have the orgasm first.
Right.
You know, and then I would come second. It was kind of, you know, like that kind of thing. And
that's the way it worked.
Yeah, and that's kind of how my relationship worked. And then next thing you know, there was no relationship, you know. It's like, and then if I did say, like, well, hey, you know, I did this or I did that, you know, and then I would get back that, well, you're a martyr now. Now you're a martyr. And, you know, and I was seeking some kind of credibility along with it, but it really wasn't coming because, ultimately, I was just losing myself along with that. So.
And it's a difficulty. It's a difficulty about having the impulse to be a caretaker in that way. That's the difficulty of it. The difficulty of it is that you don't – what you're expecting is you're going to get a payoff. And what you get instead is a challenge. And the person knows that the reason you're giving – like I know a woman who told me a story about this man who keeps sending her presents even after they've stopped seeing each other. Right? They stopped their relationship. But the they stopped their relationship, but he still keeps sending her presents.
Right, okay.
So she was asking, why is he sending presents? Why is he sending presents? And she said, I realized that he needs to send me the present for his sake. So she didn't feel like she shouldn't refuse it or that she should not take it. But he realized right. he was sending it for his sake. So caretakers give right. for their own sake.
Right,
and that's
right.
what you're
right.
doing.
I mean,
now,
what's the best way out of that, Arma? Like, what's, you know, like, what would be just to recognize that, like, you know, it doesn't feel good after all this time. It just, it's got to stop, you know. So you just stop it, and that's it.
And eventually, you'll wear thin. Eventually, you will stop doing it.
Right.
You see, eventually, you will stop from, you'll find that you don't want to do it that way.
Right, right. Because, I mean, what am I getting back, you know? It's like, I don't know. You don't even know what you're getting back anymore. It's like, well, okay. All right, well, I see it now. So anyway, Omar, thanks so much, man. And
so you're going to change. Let's see if you could find somebody who takes care of you and see if you could let them. See if you could find somebody who could give to you.
Yeah, that would be really nice.
Wouldn't that be really nice? When's your birthday?
My birthday is in February 2nd, Groundhog's Day.
Okay, on February 2nd, what do you usually do on your birthday?
Try to celebrate somehow or another. I mean,
so
I
you
like
gather a bunch of friends. You try to get a few friends. Here's the task.
Okay.
What you got to do one day, and you just got to see what this feels like. I want you to lay on a floor, and I want you to have 6 to 8 people around you.
Okay.
And I want these 6 to 8 people who know you, and I know you're a very lovable man. So
all
I
right.
want these people to just say to you, I love you, Tom. That's all I want them to say. And I want you to sit there, Tom, and not do anything but take it in. If you
right.
allow yourself to do it, and if each one could just whisper it to you over and over again, I want you to get this picture. It's like Tom is laying there,
right.
and he's got his eyes closed, and somebody, each person whispers, I love you, Tom. I love you, Tom. But you're going to let it in. Instead of you giving back, instead of smiling, you're going to let it in. You know what's going to happen, Tom? Your
right.
chest is going to crack open. You're going to feel a pain shoot through your body like you can't imagine because there's a part of you that is dying so much to receive this
yeah.
that when you finally allow yourself to do it, you'll weep and you'll be clean.
I'm looking forward to it, Armand.
Happy birthday.
Hey, thanks, Armand.
Sure. 212.
I love you. God bless you.
Thank you. I love you too, Tom. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I want to protect my father.
Sure.
And it's funny because today, when you said you wanted to hear the truth about yourself, I felt very protective towards you.
Good.
And it's, but I never noticed it, but you're a lot like my father.
It's a coincidence, huh? You like your father, don't you?
Oh, I love my father.
Oh, I love my father, right? So you want to protect your dad. Now, does that mean if your dad says something that you don't like, you don't want to tell him?
See, I thought you were more like my father. He's not the kind of person to say something that's kind of mean. It's my mother who's, he's kind of a big softy, and my mother is kind of a skinny blonde, kind of with a mean streak.
Okay, and your mom, skinny blonde, mean streak mom, says things that hurt your dad.
Yes.
And
she
you
says
wanna,
things that hurt everybody, actually.
And you want to punch her.
Yes.
You want to stop her from doing it.
Well, we fight about it.
You fight with her about how she's saying mean things.
Yes.
I'm going to tell you a little secret. This is the secret of the passive-aggressive person with the aggressive person. I see this so often in my life. The rage that your mother manifests, and you may not like me after this today, the rage that your mother manifests, the anger that she manifests, is really your father's. See, your father's this sweetie, but he never gets angry. But something happens to all his anger, so he hired your mom, who's like his hired gun. And she goes out barking at everybody. But I tell you, underneath it, whenever you see somebody who's that nice and sweet, which I'm not, there's underneath it, there would be this kind of passive-aggressive thing that manifests in them having a relationship with a meanie. Because why would your dad be with such a meanie? Because she's his hired gun. So instead of protecting your dad from your mom, it would be interesting to protect your mom from your dad and his sweetness. That's a lot to digest, don't you think?
Well, I've heard about that. My mom's a psychologist. So
a mean, skinny, blonde psychologist?
Well, she wouldn't describe herself as a mean, skinny, blonde. But
well, that's what you're doing.
Yes, because that's who she is that she hides from.
Dr. Mean.
And my father, he's kind of like, I think of him as a softy. But he's kind of, and I don't mean this to be hurtful, but you once did a show on Vainglorious.
Glorious, right.
Vainglorious. And I thought, that's Armand. Armand is very vain.
Very vain.
And my father's a lot like that, too.
He's very vain,
He justifies everything he does. He thinks everything he does is the best. When my brother dropped out of school, my father said, oh, people who go to that school are need attention. Like, he justifies things.
Yeah.
But the inner layer, what I see in my house is that, but the outside world, they wouldn't say my father's a sweetheart and my mom's mean, because my mom is not mean in public. She's
mean
kind of
in
mean
private.
In private, yeah.
So thank you very much for calling in. What's your name?
Lynn.
Lynn, thank you very much. I am not only vain, but I'm vain all the time. I'm in every form of weather. I'm a weather vane. I am that kind of person as well as you. And thank you for calling in. I'm glad I remind you of some of the good parts of your life.
Okay.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. I'm sure a lot of you have me identified somewhere as a nice daddy. You know, it just kind of makes sense. I'm a kind guy. I like people. I wish I had a father like me. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
I am guilty.
All right. Then we'll have to pay your penitence. What are you going to do to commit for your sins? What are you going to do? You're going to have to...
don't know, Armand. I'm trying to change. I just went through a terrible experience and...
I'm sorry to hear. What was your terrible experience?
My daughter was dating this person who I felt needed help, and I helped them, you know, financially, both of them. I helped them in everything they needed, and then he misunderstood my intentions. And
so your daughter's boyfriend started getting attracted to you.
Right.
And made a pass at you?
Yes.
And was romantic with you?
He tried, of course, but, you know, it wouldn't go, you know, but...
He tried, but it didn't go, and
so eventually him and my daughter split up, but seeing her suffering, you know, after the relationship, and I said, I'm going to try not to ever, you know, try to protect. I'm always trying to protect people, you know. I started doing this since I was a kid. My mother used to be beaten up by my father, and... when we came to this country from Puerto Rico, I started working at the age of 14, and I didn't even want my mother to work. I used to give her money so she wouldn't have to do anything. And I started that with my mother, and it went on with the whole family and everybody that I meet. That's the way I am. But this young man misunderstood. You know, he didn't really know how I am. I'm like that with everyone.
Take care of everybody?
I try.
Can you send me some arroz con pollo now?
Yes, I can.
I'm sure you would. You take care of it. So this is very interesting. Who takes care of you?
Exactly.
No, it's a question. Who does?
No one.
Somebody's got to take care of
you. My husband.
He does take care. Does he take care of you?
Yeah, we've been married 35 years.
How does he take care of you? What does he do to make you feel safe?
Exactly that. He makes me feel safe by his ways. He's very understanding. He's very passive, nonviolent, very loving. I think I found in him what I didn't have in my childhood. And, like I said, I'm guilty. I really am guilty. I'm going to try to change it, though.
Well, you know, what's your name, by the way?
Yvonne. I've been to see you.
Oh, Yvonne. I thought I recognized your voice. Hi there, Yvonne. Yvonne, you know, guilty is the wrong word. It's the wrong word because it's not a sin.
Okay.
See, it's a pattern. It's a thing we were born to do. They trained us when we were young. They said, this is what you got to do. You got to take care of this and you got to take care of that. You got to prevent these emotions from happening. So maybe you're tired of it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you're ready to let your daughter find her own way. You know?
Yes.
Yeah. You're terrific. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you, Armand. God bless.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand.
Hello there.
Nice to speak with you.
Nice to have you speak with me. Who is this? What's your name?
My name's Joseph.
Joseph, have you been waiting long online?
No, surprisingly.
Good.
And I heard some of your broadcast, and yes, I'm a self-preservation slash sexual in, your categorizations.
So you take care of yourself, and you're looking to connect all the time.
Yeah, and number two is, yeah, I like it, but nah, not so much. It's like you can't please everyone all the time.
But well, that's right. There are some people who believe you can please everybody all the time. There are some people who live that way. They just got to please everybody.
I've tried, maybe sometimes still. I have been labeled and am. I do label myself as a nice guy. And when I meet other nice people, put it in quotes, the idea is to be nice to nice people because nice people sometimes get stepped on, so why don't we stick together? But,
that's interesting. But do you protect nice people as well, or you just figure there's safety in numbers?
I have been a protector for sure. And,
I'm sure you are.
And I was involved as a volunteer from the first day at the Trade Center.
Sure.
I was there with the first strike. I was there for 3 weeks. Got PTSD and some other things. And now my mom has Alzheimer's. I was taking care of...
Joseph, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. When I hear it, it sends chills up my spine, knowing what you're dealing with and knowing that we could just toss it off as my mom's got Alzheimer's. But, jeez, I know what that's like on the inside of you.
Yeah. And there's a couple of dents in the wall as
sure.
a result.
Sure.
Now I find myself in a situation because of, I'm taking care of things for myself. She's in a nursing home now.
Mm-hmm.
When she's in the hospital, strangely enough, I'm there all the time. When she's at a nursing home, I'm not there as much. I've spoken to her like I've spoken to some relatives who are dead.
Yeah.
As if she were dead, and I just recently, and I realized, oh, you kind of... Even though you know she's alive, you've written her off in a way.
Well, it's not writing her off. It's kind of an interesting thing because a lot of people with parents who have Alzheimer's have this kind of reaction. Here's what they basically are saying. You're saying the mother that I knew and loved is gone, and the other one is here. I'm going to take care of the other one, but you're making peace with the fact that you lost your mom. And that's the nature of the disease. Your mom is gone.
It's terrible.
It's a horrible, horrible thing you're going through, Joseph. My heart goes out to you.
And I've been able to do some things like flowers for Algernon.
Yes.
At the end, use lecithin, other things, and then she perks up again. It's like, wow, I got real mom back.
Yeah.
And now I'm in a situation where I have to take care of myself, and I'm acting as an advocate for her on the telephone, but not seeing her as much. And I'm overwhelmed with guilt.
Yeah, I understand.
I've been pushing it back in order to get the other things done, but it's been, wow. And one other thing on my profile, I've got a cat that I've had for 2.5 years, and she's not a nice cat that's really sweet. And I've brought her up to be a cat that's very comfortable, trust me, and she was abused.
You know, Joseph, my heart goes out to you. I wish you well. Don't forget to introduce, keep your mother introduced to music, especially playing an instrument, like playing a drum or something.
Okay.
Do some research on it. You'll find that it's a real way to kind of keep things between the two of you. I have to get going. I will be back with you all next Tuesday at 1 p.m. This is Armand DeMille with Linda Vanello. We are here at thepositivemind.com if you want to go to the website. Thank you for the extension, Michael. I will be speaking to you all soon. Bye-bye.
Come join the Liquid Sound Lounge Summer Dance Boat Party. Friday, August 12th, aboard the Half Moon with DJ Jeannie Hopper, guest DJ Romaine, and live keyboards by Pablo Vergara. The boat leaves the East 23rd Street Skyport Marina. Boarding begins at 11:30 p.m. The party starts at 12:30 a.m. and lasts until 3:30 a.m. Partial proceeds will benefit Art for Progress, which focuses on nurturing emerging artists. For more information, visit liquidsoundlounge.com. Make sure you reserve your spot on the dance floor, and don't miss the boat.
On Sunday, August 14th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present Tony and Grammy Award winner Dee Dee Bridgewater. Tune in to hear more about this extraordinary song stylist, actress, and entertainer. That's Sunday, August 14th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. I'm Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide, weekday afternoons. Coming up in just about an hour at 3 p.m., we'll be Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton, 5 o'clock Shadow with Robert Knight at 5, and the evening news at 6 p.m. Off the Hook. News and information from the Hacker Underground with Emmanuel Goldstein will be coming your way at 7 p.m. An announcement just before we reach the top of the hour. On Thursday, August 11th, that's tomorrow, the People's Organization for Progress, or POP, will host a press conference to spotlight its daily People's Campaign for Jobs, Peace, Justice, and Equality. It will take place at 12 noon at the Lincoln Memorial, located at Springfield Avenue and West Market Street, the intersection there in Newark, New Jersey. The press conference will take place on the campaign's 46th consecutive day. For more information, you could dial 973-801-0001. That's 973-801-0001. Coming up in a moment, Women in the Making.